What's going on, everybody, and welcome to this edition of All Sports Best, the podcast. We have on a special guest. His name is Diamond Hall. He is a Wright State mental skills coordinator for the baseball team, and I'd like to welcome you on. Diamond, how you doing?
How you doing?
Doing well.
Thank you.
Yes, sir, absolutely. I appreciate you being on. And, of course, I got a ton of questions for you. I sent you kind of a decent list of this. You know exactly what to expect, but really excited for this one. So I'm going to start off with kind of your background and kind of how you got started. So just kind of where'd you grow up? I mean, where'd you get started?
So I grew up here in Dayton, Ohio. I guess this past started
after I'd had the injury with my football career, and I wasn't cleared to play football anymore. And what happened there was I went head first, diving for a loose fumble, and I crashed head on with somebody. And long story short, I ended up being temporarily paralyzed, and I had to go to a few different doctors and neurologists to see what was going on my neck. But it ended up coming out that I had congenital stenosis, and I was born with that. So I was kind of lucky. This was around my my freshman year that I found out that I had this. So I was kind of lucky because I was playing. I wasn't playing at the college level. I wasn't playing against bigger guys who could have, you know, like really, really severely like ended my career.
Right.
Probably ended, you know, a lot of other things too. But I ended up being temporary paralysis, and the doctor didn't clear me to play football anymore. They didn't clear me to play basketball anymore. I started playing baseball. I just picked up baseball, and I was like, I have to be able to use my physical abilities to, you know, to do something. So I started playing baseball. I really started getting into it. I learned to love it over time. I studied the game day in and day out. I took the dedication that I had from, you know, football and basketball and track, and I just geared it towards baseball. You know, there's a book called The Outliers, and it talks about this 10,000 hours concept. And the 10,000 hours concept is, you know, if you put in 10,000 quality hours at your craft, you know, once you reach that 10,000 hour point, you'll be an expert in whatever it is that you do.
Really?
So that's the kind of the mentality and the work ethic I took and put it into baseball.
That kind of became like work for you then. So it kind of was like, it wasn't a love at first. You just kind of adapted a love for it.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Like at first I didn't love it. I mean, before I started playing, I was one of those guys who was looking from the outside in, like, oh man, baseball is boring. I don't even understand how people, like, I was one of those people. But then when you don't have anything else and that's the only thing you have, and then you start getting into it, and it became, for me, it was more of a life game too, because you have so many lessons that you can learn from baseball that transfer over into life. So really, for me, it was a blessing in disguise. It's the best thing that ever happened to me, because if I would have kept playing football and I would have stayed at the level I was at with football, I was one of the top running backs in the country. So, you know, I always felt like I was on top of the world. And football, you can't really get humble if you're really, really good. Baseball, you can be really, really good, and you can go 0 for 20.
Right.
Like, this is a game where you can get humble really, really fast. But I was never experiencing those kind of humbling situations while I was playing football, because I was always, you know, I was always the best athlete. I was always the best running back on the field. So at the end of the day, this was the best thing that ever happened to me.
Wow.
But yeah, you're right. I learned the game. I learned to love the game, and I mean it's been great for me. And it's what got me into the mental side of the game, because making that transition from football to baseball, you know, I had to learn how to control my emotions, because you know, in football you can get pissed off in the very next play, go use that energy.
Right.
And, you know, it turned into something positive. In baseball, you have to make sure you're calm and level at all times in order to be consistent, especially as a hitter. So that was something I had to learn really quick. And luckily for me, you know, I came across Hit the Baseball. That was one of the first books I read when I started playing.
And that shot my game to the next level, because after I read that book, you know, my bookshelf just started growing and started growing and started growing. So I was learning things that not only applied to baseball, that applied to life. And, you know, while I was reading these books, you know, at those times, for me, it was like, okay, this is to get me to the next level of my baseball career.
Sure.
It wasn't until, you know, I got to college that I realized, you know, all these books that I've been reading, like, these apply everywhere. And you know, I've attained all this knowledge that I can, you know, I can use, you know, for the rest of my life, not only in baseball, but everywhere else. So everything kind of happened and fell into place. And it was just a blessing in disguise at the end of the day.
So you started reading these books. You started learning onto the mentality side of really just sports, not necessarily just baseball, but sports in general. And did that kind of urge you into going into that field in college, or did you just kind of adapt this position after reading and kind of experiencing it firsthand?
Yeah, I kind of just adapted this and made the adjustment as my career was coming to an end, because, you know, obviously while I was in the, you know, while I was in the peak of my baseball career, I was like, you know, there's, you know, I'm going to be playing for a while. I'm going to be playing for the next 20 years. You know, that was one of my goals, to play in the league. And that didn't end up happening. You know, when you start to realize, okay, my career's coming to an end, you have to find something else that that your talents and abilities allow you to be good at. And I was always one of the guys too. It was like, oh man, I'm never going to be a coach. I'm never going to be a coach. And I got a little taste of it last summer with the Dayton Classics, and I completely loved it. And so, you know, I came across Coach Mercer at Wright State University, and I had a few other job opportunities down in Georgia to do the mental side of the game training, to do the mental skills training, and ended up, you know, choosing Wright State over those places. So.
So I got to know, I mean, of course, it worked out for you. Your mentality is probably at its peak right now, especially after reading and learning and working with other people. But what kind of relationship do you have with your players that helps them to really buy in? Because I'm, from what I understand and kind of my own experience playing college baseball, in order to buy into any coach's philosophy, it takes a little bit of adjusting to get used to it. So how do you use your relationship with your players to help them kind of ease into that process?
Well, at the beginning of the fall, when I first came on staff, you know, I understood that, you know, I was the new guy coming on staff, so it may take a while to get these guys, you know, 100% bought in to something that's this new and that nobody's ever done before. And I understand that, and I've always kind of understood that buy-in is earned. It's not given to you. So I had to, you know, I had to show through the investments I was making on an individual basis and a team basis that, you know, I was here to help these guys reach the goal that the program has set out for us, that Coach Mercer has set out for us, which is to get a championship. So I think just over time, you know, slowly chipping away at it, slowly just, you know, honestly, you know, chipping away at my craft, kind of allowed them to slowly buy in. And, you know, once you got everybody on board, then, I mean, there's nothing better than that, really.
Yeah, and so would you say it's a lot more of a challenge for some players than others? And have you ever found like a distinguishable trait, like maybe pitchers are harder to buy in, or position players, or catchers, or whatever, anything like that?
I wouldn't say it's down to that point when it comes to buy-in. I think it's really just a matter of, from my personal perspective, it was a matter of me like really investing in these guys and showing that I cared about them as a person and as a player, and I was there for their development. Before I came on staff, you know, I had made sure I called every single guy just to get to know him before I even saw him. You know, that this is the kind of investment I'm talking about. I mean, like phone call after phone call. I mean, you got, you know, a roster of 35 guys, and you know, some of those conversations would last for about, you know, 30, 40 minutes each. But that's how invested I was at the beginning of, you know, once we started this. That's how invested I was. I wanted to make sure that, you know, from the very beginning, that, you know, I was showing these guys and, you know, the coaching staff that this is how invested I am. This is this is how much work I'm going to put in. This is just how I am. So through those, you know, through building those relationships, through building the trust of the guys, I think it just all fell into place. And I don't think that, you can really say that a hitter, or it's harder to get a hitter to buy in or a pitcher to buy in. It really just depends, you know, on the individual and their perception of the mental side of the game. And that was part of my role too, is explaining and educating them on exactly what this is and how much it can help their performance at the end of the day. So I think it depends, you know, kind of too on the person delivering the information.
Yeah.
You know, for me, I'm more of a, and I just got done playing, so I'm still relatable to these guys. I'm not, you know, 60 or 70 years old, and there's nothing wrong with being 60 or 70 years old, but there's, you know, there's always that generational disconnect when you have that, you know, that much space in between your age. So
absolutely.
I'm still right there next to them, but I'm kind of in between them and the coach. You know what I mean? So
right.
I kind of got, that's kind of a blessing in disguise too there.
So you can relate to them, but they also can respect you because you're obviously older than them, and they kind of understand that you're a little bit more wise than they might be.
Exactly.
What would you consider your top points for every player to be? Like, if you were to just break it down into, like, maybe a few bullet points, what would you say are probably the most important parts of mentality as a whole in baseball?
So on a mentality side, I think – I always understand that with the mental side of the game, that everybody's different. And you're going to be different than your best friend when it comes to the mental side of the game. Different things are going to work for you that may not work for him. Another thing, too, is visualization. I think visualization is one of the most underrated tools that the average human uses, especially the baseball player. I mean, you can visualize yourself, you know, hitting like 20 line drives, and your body is going to make the adjustments in order for you to do that. And there's been research done on visualization that shows that your body, like neurochemicals and different things are released from your body when you actually visualize. Like, your mind doesn't understand what's real and what's not real.
That's really cool
so
stuff.
Kind of think about when you have a drink. You have a bad dream. You wake up from that bad dream, you're sweating, like,
yeah,
everything's different. Your heart's beating fast, but it didn't actually happen. That's how your body reacts when your mind visualizes something to the point to where it thinks it's real, if that makes sense. So
it does, yeah.
How I kind of explain it to them in the fall is, imagine if we can use this power to, you know, on the baseball field, to improve our performance on the baseball field.
And have you?
When you have a dream, that, like, that's unintentional. But right. When you visualize, that's intentional focus. You can actually practice perfect practice in your mind.
Do you kind of push the law of attraction towards your players, kind of giving them a, you know, somewhat of a guidance, maybe, or do you guys use that or anything like that?
So when that was one of the, so we had middle game meetings in the fall. We're still doing a few now, but we had a lot of them in the fall. One of the middle game meetings, I had them go home and watch The Secret on Netflix.
Nice.
That was one of the things I had them do. And the guys loved it. Because, you know, when you look past some of the cheesy stuff that's in the book and some of the cheesy stuff that's in the movie, like, it's real. It's real. You know, everything behind it is real. Like, it's true. Your thoughts become things at the end of the day. Whatever you think about, whatever you put into your mind, whether it's negative or positive, it's going to manifest itself into your life, into your actual hands. So, I do talk about that.
That's awesome. Yeah, and I like it. And when I talk to people about this kind of thing, the coolest part about it is that there's no down payment for stuff like that. You just literally, worst thing that can happen is you thought positive thoughts. And I think that's a cool thing to buy into.
Exactly right. There's nothing that can, with the mental side of the game, you're right, that is the best part about it. There's nothing that can, they can hurt you. It's not something to where, okay, if I do this, this may hurt my performance. Like, no, if you buy in completely and you do step one, step two, step three, like I lay out on the table for you, it's going to help in some way, shape, or form, whether it's something really small or something really, really big that changes your career. So I agree with you there.
Right. And okay, so when I think about, you know, the mental side of just living life. I think about the book, The Secret, just like you mentioned. I think about The Alchemist, which is actually a highly pushed book by like people, big time people like Will Smith and people that have been successful. You mentioned The Outlier. What other books really kind of would you point to for people that are trying to think positively and think of a good side of I guess the mental part of life?
There's a book called Body Mind Mastery by Dan Millman, and he worked with Phil Jackson and the Bulls while Michael Jordan was playing with them.
Wow.
And Phil Jackson had all of his players, you know, even up until Kobe Bryant, to read this book at the very beginning of each season. And when you read this book and you think about, I don't know if you keep up with basketball, but when you think about like Kobe Bryant at the beginning of his career and, you know, at the end of his career, and you compare the two, it's like he matured at a substantial level. Now, that came with age, but at the same time, that came with, you know, his growth and development from a mental standpoint. And when you watch some of these interviews, when Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant are talking about, you know, like how they got so good once they were playing under Phil Jackson, they kind of give him credit, a lot of credit. They call him like the Zen master, but this is because he was, you know, giving them these resources and making these guys read these kind of books. And they were going through them every day at practice and these kind of things. So I think that's definitely one book I would recommend. It's Body Mind Mastery. And that's a book that you can apply to life and sports.
Do you refer back to books constantly whenever you go to practice or when you're talking in the dugout during games and things like that? Do you guys reference back and forth on things like that?
I wouldn't say I reference back and forth about it, but I've gotten a lot of our guys to, you know, to get into reading some of these books. And the best part about that is, you know, for them, it's self-education. You know, if I just recommend a book to a guy and he gets it and he reads it, that's, you know, that's him taking in that information as opposed to me having to give it to him.
Yeah.
And lay it out for him. Like he's, you know, he's fully invested and he wants to learn. And that's the best thing about that. When I see guys, you know, taking in these books and reading these books, like that means he's wanting to learn. He's wanting to grow himself. So, and that's the goal at the end of the day.
Do you sit down with each player and break it down individually? You know, I know you said that you called them individually before the season, but let's say, like, as the season goes through, do you talk to them individually, break it down and things like that? Or do you talk to, you know, the staff as a whole? Do you talk to the, you know, pitching staff, the hitters, the coaches? Do you talk to the, you know, whole team? How does that work?
So actually, we've done literally all of those.
Okay.
At the beginning of the fall, we broke it down. We had individual sessions to where, you know, we broke down our goals. We broke down some other things and broke down and individualized it for them. You know, the catchers, pitchers, hitters, fielders, everybody, even from a leadership standpoint. Some of these guys had goals to be, you know, to become better leaders throughout the course of the whole year. So we set out a plan and individualized the plan and customized the plan for each guy. And then after that phase was over, we went into the group meetings. It's where we do the pitchers and then the hitters. Uh-huh. And then after that was over, when we got back from winter, we kind of went on an individual basis, you know, just me giving little nuggets here and there. If I see something, if I notice something, and these guys are really receptive. They're really good listeners, and they take in everything that us as a staff give them. So that's one of the, I know we're getting off topic here, but that's one of the other things that, you know, I'm very thankful to be on this staff too.
Yeah.
And within this program, because these guys are, they're a group of guys who are learners. They're learners and they're growers, and they're always looking for ways to get better.
Yeah, that's huge, especially when it comes to your job, right?
Absolutely. It makes my job a lot easier. You know, I haven't had to struggle with any guys or you know, hey, you need to be doing, like, they're always receptive. Like, hey, what you got for me today? Like, what you got for me here? What you got for me here? Like, and I always, you know, I always make sure I'm giving them the right information.
Yeah, that's really cool. Okay, so you talked about the fact that you have your players take the mental approach of the fact that things are happening for them, no matter what it is, if it's an out, if it's a, you know, if it's a hit, if it's a strikeout, if it's a walk, whatever it is, things are happening for them. So could you explain that for us?
Absolutely. So the concept is that Everything in life is happening for you, not to you. Most people, the average person, they look at life like, oh man, this is happening to me.
Yeah.
Or say if something negative happens, like, oh, life is happening to me. And this is natural for us to think like that. I mean, when I had that injury with football, that's the first thing I thought. I was like, why is this happening to me? But, you know, once I grew and matured, like, I realized that it happened for me.
Right.
So it's just really just the concept that I've kind of put in their ear throughout the course of the season to understand that, you know, every AB that you have, whether it ends up being the result that you want or not, like, if you're willing to learn from it, then it's happening for you. Period in the story. And it's kind of a decision thing. It's whether or not you decide the things to be happening for you or not, because your perception depends, your perception dictates everything else. And you probably heard of the equation E plus R equals O, like event plus response equals outcome. There's always going to be an event, whether it's negative or positive, and you're always going to have a response to that negative or positive event. And it's, that response is going to be negative or positive, and that's going to equal the outcome that you get.
I like this. I like all of these different tips, and it's nice. It's really cool. Okay, so I think a huge part of the mental strength is being able to channel your emotion. So how can you work with your players in preparation for failure?
I think the ability to stay level at all times is key. So when you think about, you know, controlling your emotions, like you said, think of the EKG, right? You know, the heart thing that goes up and down.
Uh-huh.
When you go to the emergency room, like, you want that to be flat, like, right?
Okay.
Now, you don't want it to be flat in life, but you want that to always be flat. So
yeah.
Once you realize you're getting too high, you want to bring yourself back down. Once you realize you're getting too low, you want to bring yourself back up.
Okay.
So never let the highs get too high. Never let the lows get too low. And once you're able to, and that takes practice. It takes practice every single day in every single situation. You have to practice staying level, because when you do, now you're going to get into a high-pressure situation, and you've been practicing staying level in other situations, so it's not going to be, harder than it will for somebody else who hasn't been practicing this.
Yeah. Okay. And I mean, how do you work them through it when it actually happens? I know that some players are definitely upset to the point where they probably don't want to talk about it. They just struck out, big moment. Gosh dang it, I understand the mentality side of everything, but right now I don't want to be talked to. Do you let them cool off, or do you kind of bring them out of it almost immediately?
Well, I think it depends on the guy. And I have to understand, you know, with my position that this is a process.
Right.
Just like I tell these guys, you know, trust the process. But I know that I've given them the tools to, even when they do that, they know that that's not what's, you know, they shouldn't be doing that. And then they'll make the conscious adjustment. To make those changes over a course of time. So sometimes I'll say something and sometimes I won't. It really just depends on the guy and the situation, where we are in the game. It depends on a lot of different factors, because I have to make sure I have the feel. Just like anybody else, just like any other coach, you have to make sure you have feel for your players and, when to let them go and when to say something.
Trust the process. Are you a big Joel Embiid fan?
Yeah, I am.
Absolutely. Okay, sweet. That's good stuff.
Talks about the process a lot.
Yeah, he definitely does. Setting goals plays a large part of the thought process in baseball. So when do you do that with your players? Do you guys do that weekly, monthly, you know, by the series? How does that work?
So we've done goal setting quite a few times. And the reason for that is because you do want to constantly reset your goals and reevaluate the goals that you had before, to make sure you're staying on the right track, because goals can change throughout the course of the season, throughout the course of the off season.
Sure.
So at the beginning of this, at the beginning of the year in the fall, we set goals. We set really, really big outcome goals for the long term, and then throughout the course of this season, we've had I think 3 or 4 goal setting sessions. We try to do that monthly.
Wow.
And, you know, some of the guys who are really, really invested, they go every 2 weeks. I leave that to be optional and up to them. We just sit down and reset our goals. But I think that's really important, because your goals, I mean, we've all been on, I mean, you've played, you've been on teams where you talk about the goal, your goals at the beginning of the year, and then you never you never talk about them again.
Right.
That's one of the biggest mistakes that I've noticed, you know, throughout my playing career when it comes to goal setting. Like, oh man, like we set these awesome goals. Now are we holding ourselves accountable every 2 weeks, every so often? Are we holding ourselves accountable? Are we reevaluating these goals? Because your goals can change, you know, depending on how the season goes. You can set a goal to be the best hitter in your league.
Yeah.
Or have the most walks, and then or something like that. And then, things start to change, and you realize that's not going to be an attainable goal. So, okay, let's reset our goals. Now let's hit something that's realistic. So I think that, setting goals, goal setting is a tremendous asset to anything that you do. And this is not only baseball, this is in life, too. You always want to set goals for whatever it is that you're doing.
I'm sure you help your players set big goals for baseball, their lives, everything like that, even probably your coaching staff. But, of course, you got to practice what you preach. So what are your personal goals?
So one of my personal goals right now, is to help us win a championship.
Ah.
That's the goal I'm focused on the most, is to do everything I can in my power with our guys to, contribute and help us win a championship.
All right, very cool. So can I run through a couple of examples for ways that you would handle situations from the mental aspect of things?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so first one is a player strikes out, slams his bat on the ground on his way to the dugout. How do you handle that?
I think it goes back to what we said before. Like, that depends on the guy. It depends on what guy it is. It depends on his personality and how he takes in information. So some guys will let him go, and then some guys will, say something right away.
So I was a pitcher, so I can say this. But a lot of times, pitchers get in their own heads quite often. It's a huge mental part of baseball to be on the mound, obviously, center stage. But a pitcher has difficulty throwing strikes and gets down on himself. What's the best way to kind of cope with that?
To do the opposite, to keep as positive as possible in those situations, is to focus on the task at hand and control what you can control. If you focus on the things that are within your control, you give yourself more of a probability to succeed on the mound, regardless of how you're feeling, regardless of if you are getting down yourself. And I've heard kids of the business say it a few times that confidence is sometimes overrated. It's a matter of, Embiid says, we focus on the process. Regardless of where your confidence level is at that point in time, you focus on the things that allow you to be successful while you're on the mound, and then you'll start to see the results that you want, hopefully. Not a guarantee, but most of the time, if you do focus on the process that allows you to be successful, you will be.
Okay, so those two are heat-of-the-moment type of situations. In this case, a player is upset that he isn't playing as much as he thinks he maybe should. You can probably deal with that a little bit differently. How do you encourage somebody that, hey, I know you're not playing where you want to be, but, keep your head up. How do you do that?
I think exactly what you just said, just those words. Sometimes that's all these guys need. It's just a few words of encouragement. And other times you have to go a little bit more in depth. But I don't think that we've had too many of those situations this year where guys gotten super, super down on themselves, because that's been part of my role as well, making sure that they don't get that far into a hole when they start struggling. So
right. Okay. And yeah, of course that's a big part of it, because you want a good dugout. Those are the teams that actually you'll see at the College World Series. You'll see all of the dugouts up at every given moment. But okay, so a team, this is my last example for you, or my last scenario for you. And this one is something that I think a lot of coaches have questions about, and even players. But a team, or your team, is gearing up to play a big team, maybe a ranked team or well-known program. Intimidation always plays a big part in that, a lot of times does. What do you tell your team at that point?
I think it's a matter of playing versus the baseball. Our head coach, Coach Mercer, he talks about this a lot as well, playing versus the baseball, because that's the one thing that's constant. It doesn't matter what jersey they have on. It doesn't matter the big stadium they have. You want to treat everybody we play exactly the same. at the end of the day. And that's easier said than done. But again, if it's practiced, you know, it can be executed. So.
Yeah. Okay. Very cool. Yeah. That's awesome too, because, you know, that's one thing. I coach a little bit every now and again, and I coached this year and it was tough. You see a big team, like say in basketball or even baseball, and it's like, oh man, those guys are really good. It makes it a lot harder to coach those kind of, you know, situations.
I think it's also a matter of like, you know, realizing, and this boils down to the players at the end of the day, kind of up to them when it comes to these things, like not putting the other team on a pedestal, which is often one of the things that, you know, players are guilty of. And sometimes even coaches are guilty of, oh man, these guys are really, really good. Like once you start doing that, now you're focusing on them. Like you're putting them on a pedestal in your mind. So you have to stay focused on yourself. You have to stay focused on your own team. You have to focus on your strengths and the ways that you'll be able to beat them with what you have, instead of looking at it the other way around. So I think that plays a big role in it too.
You say that you shouldn't have a short-term memory approach because it limits your ability to evaluate what you did. Do you ever talk coaches out of saying things like keep a short memory or anything like that?
No, and I think the short-term memory approach, I don't mean that you shouldn't have a short-term memory approach. I think what I was trying to say when I said that was a lot of people want to, you know, they end up failing. So say you have a bad AB. Now you completely forget about that bad AB without analyzing and evaluating what went wrong and what you can do better the next AB. That's the step that's missing in between. Now after that, now you can put it, you know, now you can throw it in the trash can or completely forget about it. But you have to make sure you get that information and you learn from that at bat, or you learn from that outing, versus completely dismissing it and not addressing it at all. And I think that's where a lot of players make mistakes. Like, okay, I just had a bad outing. I just had a bad outing on the mound. I'm going to completely forget about it. And sometimes that may be good, but the most productive way to go about the situation is to literally, you know, sit down for 10 to 15 minutes and figure out, you know, what you did differently, what you did wrong, what you did right, and what you're going to go to now.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good point. And from what I understand,
and you can have a short-term memory.
Yeah. Okay. So from what I understand from this interview, what I've been able to gather is that Coach Mercer seems like he's a really good coach with a good attitude. But have you ever had to work with any coaches that maybe didn't have the best attitude? And how would you, if you did have to work with a coach that, you know, side by side with a coach that didn't have the best attitude, how would you approach that?
No, I haven't. Luckily, I have not had say anything to our coaches. Our coaching staff was already great. I mean, they were already bought into the mental side of the game before I even got here. So that's another one of those blessings that I've been able to come on staff and have these guys next to me. But if I were to say I was working with like a, you know, high school team or something, and I saw that, I mean, you just have to say these kind of things. Like, hey, I think this is affecting our team this way. When you do this, this, and this, you know, our guys do this, this, and this. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I guess I'm going to have to cross that bridge when I get there.
Yeah, you hope you'd hope. Hopefully not, though. Yeah. Do your players work with each other to get through difficult situations? Have you kind of trained them to be able to do that?
I wouldn't say that I've trained them to do that. I think that's, you know, the competitors that we have, the competitors that Coach Mercer has recruited. They automatically, that's already in them, and they're all completely bought into our culture. They're completely bought into our program. They're completely bought into everything that we believe in, and they pick each other up. You know, they know when a guy's down, and they know when something needs to be said to them, and they're really good as far as doing that. I mean, we have a really mature team at the end of the day, so. That's really something that I really can't say that I'm trained them to do any of that. I mean, I may have said something here and there, and our coaching staff may have said something here and there, but they're the guys that, you know, take, they take the leadership when it comes to that. They take responsibility when it comes to those kind of things with their teammates, and they do a really good job of that. But, you know, I kind of look back on the teams that I played on, and I played on some really, really good teams. But I know I would have meshed really well with these guys because the mentality that all these guys have, and how good of teammates they are, and how dedicated they are on a daily basis, and how invested they are in the program. I just love to see, I love to see these guys succeed, you know, knowing all the hard work that they put in.
Yeah, it sounds like great chemistry. You guys have pretty dang good chemistry. And I'm going to kind of get away from maybe what we've been talking about with scenarios and things like that, but how does music play a role in your line of work?
I would say the one thing that the music can play a big difference with is your amp level or your arousal level. So say like a walkout song, you want a walkout song is probably where it intertwines with my line of work the most. Like, you know, when you're choosing a walk-up song, you want something that you have, first of all, you have to know yourself.
Yeah.
Like, do I play really, really well when I'm super hyped up, or do I play really, really well when I'm, like, really, really calm? So yeah, you have to know where you are on those and the spectrums, and then once you're able to address that, now you might want to pick your walk-up song or your walk-out song based on, you know, what gets you in this type of feel, what gets you feeling this type of way, what gets you thinking along these kind of lines.
Yeah, that's a good point.
What gets you at this amp level, what gets you at that amp level. Yeah, you wanna do everything on a strategic level to, you know, to make sure you're getting the most out of your performance. And I think that can definitely play a part. I mean, you don't want to pick a walk-up song that's gonna piss you off before you go up to your
AD. Yeah.
You don't want to pick a walk-up song that's gonna, you know what I mean? Like,
oh yeah. That was one of the biggest moments in college baseball for me and my team. At any given moment, it was like, hey dude, have you heard your song, have you been listening to it, you know, is that gonna be it? And I remember one year, man, I picked a bad song because every time I'd go somewhere, everybody had that song. I'm sure you know exactly what I mean when I say, did you hear The Man by Aloe Black?
Yeah,
dude, oh my gosh, worst choice I ever made. But it made me feel like a G because I'd get up there and my teammates, like, they bought into the whole, like, hey, you know, you're going to close this game out or whatever. And so that was pretty neat. But, you know, to go to every single stadium and be like, oh, cool, you know, everybody has that song. There's two dudes on this team that has this song.
Yeah. I think that was one of my choices when I was picking one of my walkouts money. I'm pretty sure that was on one of my lists.
Wow.
Oh man, that's funny.
That's crazy. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I've had some good ones, but yeah, I had teammates that were like the best walk-up song guys. But do you use film or YouTube videos of maybe players, coaches in the major leagues to kind of give your players examples?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think that's the best way to when you talk about creating buy-in, to go back to when we talk about that, when you talk about creating buy-in, like that's one of the,
oh yeah,
easiest ways to get guys to buy in. And that's one of the, you know, like, those are the people at the top level. If you see these guys at the top level in the MLB talking about controlling what you can control, talking about controlling their breathing, talking about competing one pitch at a time, talking about staying in the present moment, talking about visualization, talking about self-talk, talking about all of these things that are extremely important when it comes to the mental side of the game, and that just adds credibility to what you're doing. I mean, at the end of the day, that's where these guys, that's one of these guys' goals, is to get to the, you know, to get to the major leagues, to get to the next level.
Yeah.
So, you know, being able to show them video, and I've kind of created a video bank of a lot of MLB players, and I'll either shoot it to them in a text message if I think it resonates with a certain guy, or during one of the middle game meetings, we'll put it on the, we'll hook it up to the TV, just let it play. I think there was one example I can give you is a video we watched with Ian Kinsler and a few other pro guys, and they were talking about breathing like a sniper.
Oh, really?
I can send it to you. Yeah, I can send it to you after this, but they were talking about breathing like a sniper. So a good 10 to 12 minute video. You should be able to find it on YouTube, but it was talking about how they would, you know, they would train and they would get their heart rates up, and then they would, you know, focus on their breathing in order to bring the heart rate down. And they were actually, the whole video is of them actually shooting snipers and focusing on their breathing, and them talking about like what they felt here, what they felt there. It's pretty interesting video. But
wow.
The best part about that was, you know, like these are consistent pro guys. These are consistently good pro guys who are in the league, you know, talking about these things. So me being able to show them that video is like, all right, you know, these guys are doing it. You know, I want to get to that level. I got to do that too. I got to focus on these things too.
Right.
So really, just, you know, adds credibility and gives it at the same time. It's quality information. Like, it's all quality information. So
I was fortunate enough to take a sports psychology class in college, and one of the things that I know they really kind of pointed out to us was, and it was through a video actually of Evan Longoria, and what he would do is he would find a focal point in his stadium that he could find anywhere in any stadium, and his was the top of the foul pole to kind of bring him back and kind of calm him down in big moments. Do you kind of do anything like that to kind of keep them just kind of like on an even keel like that?
Absolutely. So this is one of the other things we did at the beginning of the fall. So some guys, they like focal points. Some guys, they don't. The guys who do like focal points, they were able to, you know, choose the focal points they wanted to have for the course of the season, and they, you know, they stick with it.
Yeah.
And then the guys who don't like focal points, they just don't have one. And I think that's another thing to, you know, to keep in mind is that everything with the mental side of the game, like, it's completely individualized, completely customized. Like, if you feel like this doesn't help you, then this isn't what we're going to work on. We're going to work on something else. And I think that that video is the E60 with Evan Longoria. We were talking about how he worked with Kendra Vincent, right? Yeah, that's a really good 10-minute video, too.
Do you use, and I know you have social media, and actually you've reached a lot of people with a couple of the videos that you've posted up on Twitter, I know for a fact, but do you use it, and by it I mean social media, to reach more people?
Yes. I mean, I think that's social media is the best way to impact people's lives while you're not there.
Right.
And that's what I try to do with my Twitter and my social media, is to impact the people who I'm not around. I mean, I'm around a staff of a group of 35, 40 guys every day, and that's it. But, you know, on social media, you know, I can reach people who are overseas. I've had a few people, you know, direct message me on Twitter that are overseas, telling me, like, thank you for what you do. It's really helping my game.
That's incredible.
That's what makes me feel good at the end of the day. Me being able to add value to other people's careers, other people's lives, and, you know, just through a simple video. But yeah, I definitely use social media to help impact, you know, as many lives as I can at the end of the day.
Would you be open to the possibility of working with other sports also?
Oh yeah. So I've already, one of my former teammates, he's in the NFL right now. We're kind of doing a little bit of work together.
Sweet.
On a bi-weekly basis, and I think it you know, me playing football, me running track, me, you know, playing baseball, me, you know, playing basketball, you know, I'm able to kind of relate to every sport, so to say, all of those sports, so to say. So I think it's really easy for me to use the same things that I'm teaching these guys here at Wright State with other sports.
Yeah, all around them.
I'm definitely going to be open to that for the rest of my career. But I think, you know, since I was so indulged in baseball, and I still am, you know, this is probably going to be the primary sport that I choose to work with.
Can you name drop the NFL player?
I can't.
Oh, you can't. Oh, dang.
I can't.
I got you. All right, so. All Sports Best is sponsored by Constructors Inc., Kaleidoscopes Ice Cream and More, Fashion Eyeworks, Bowen Insurance, and Albertsons Market. Diamond, I appreciate you for being on, and I'm really excited about this part of the segment, and it's called Rapid Fire. What I'm going to do is I'm going to shoot off questions at you, and you're just going to hit me back with what you got. So you ready for this?
Yeah, let's do it.
Favorite book?
360 Degree Leadership.
Favorite MLB team?
Yankees.
Favorite role model?
Derek Jeter.
Favorite player ever? Is it going to be... Is it the
baseball?
Same? Yes.
Baseball player? Derek Jeter again.
Okay, all right. Best coach in the bigs right now?
Joe Maddon.
Favorite color? best coaching moment?
Oof, that's a tough one. I had a lot of those. I don't know. I still think the best one is yet to come.
Okay. Hey, there you go. Great answer. what's your favorite food?
Favorite food? Salad.
Favorite TV show?
Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Am I on a time frame here? Are we it's like a game
no,
show.
No,
like
you're fine. Game. You're fine. Just a quick shoot back, but that's a great answer. That's one of the best of all time. But favorite song?
Ooh, favorite song. Wow.
We can go favorite artist if you have one.
Favorite artist, Drake. That's easy. Drake.
Hey, all right. Okay, favorite movie?
Favorite movie, Remember the Titans.
Hey, okay. Very good. Away game trip essentials.
Got to have my Beats headphones.
Okay. There you go.
Listening to the podcast.
Yeah, listening to this podcast. iPhone or Android?
iPhone. Anybody who has an Android, it's time to get an iPhone.
Team goal for the season? I think you kind of answered that before. Yeah, okay. And then last bit of advice for any young athletes hoping to reach the next level?
To focus on getting better every single day. Focus on getting 1% better every single day. No matter what that is, you have to figure out, you know, what that is you have to focus on and what you have to change every single day. But make sure you're consciously getting better every single day and staying away from going through the motions. And another thing is to keep yourself around people who light your fire. Keep yourself around people who influence you to do what you want to do and reach your goal, because you become the average of the five people you spend the most of your time with. So keep yourself around, and this may, you know, be within your team too. If you're hanging out with the wrong teammates, then you got to figure out the group that you need to be hanging out with in order to get to where you want to get to. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, that's amazing advice. Are there any shout outs you'd like to give before we go?
Absolutely. All my players at Rice State, our coaching staff, Coach Mercer, Coach Tallarico, Coach Metz, Coach Sogard, Coach Burke, and then every single one of my players. I would list you right now, but we got 35 guys. and then of course, my family, my mother, my little brother.
Diamond, thank you so much for being on the show. It means a lot. It was a lot of fun to hear a lot of this. I'm going to be listening back to this podcast from time to time just to get some more advice here and there for life. So thank you so much, and I wish you guys the very best of luck.
Absolutely. Appreciate you having me.